Ingu Oladamare Jinyami Olarun God Jehovah Allah Amen Ra, the many names for the original ancestor, the ancestor who sees all and knows all, the creator of the heavens and the earth. We do not pour libation to you, but this morning we come pouring libation in memory and honor of our ancestors and asking them to intercede with you on our behalf. We know that our ancestors, being in the spirit world, are closer to you, and there's a greater opportunity that our request will be granted. We ask this morning that you grant the listeners the willingness to open their hearts and their minds to the information that's going to be shared, such that they will hear the truth and then be able to act on the truth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors from Mother Africa, the ancestors who were the beginning of the human family that we now have, no matter what your ethnic or cultural background is, the beginning of human life as we know it was on the African continent. Every person on the face of the earth has as their original ancestor an African. We ask those Africans who were the first to conceive of a family, the first to plant a seed, the first to till the land, the first to domesticate animals, the first to navigate the mighty Nile River to Egypt, the first to build a skyscraper, the first to do surgery, the first to explore the wonders of the galaxy, and as importantly, the first to conceive of the belief in one God. We ask those ancestors to come and be with us today, to bring their wisdom, their hard work, their ingenuity to all that we do. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To our ancestors who were murdered, displaced, diminished during our great Holocaust, our great Miafa, we do not forget you. We remember your unwilling sacrifice as your bodies are lined the Sahara and the Atlantic Ocean. We remember you and we honor you and we ask that you come and be with us today. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. We ask our ancestors who gave us the great document, the Ma'at, to come be with us, bring your additional sense of honor and integrity as embodied by Ma'at to our discussions and our listings this morning. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. To those ancestors from the Caribbean islands, from Brazil, from the southern parts of these United States, who through your unpaid labor laid the groundwork for the civilizations that are enjoyed by billions of people around the world. To those ancestors, we say we do not forget you. We remember your sacrifice, your hard work. And we ask that you come and be with us today to inspire us to also do the work required to correct a world that has gone mad. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And to those ancestors who are yet to be born, those ancestors for whom we do good work, those ancestors to whom we pledge to honorably do righteous work all the time for ourselves, for our family, for our community, so we can be correct to be able to benefit from the largesse that the Creator has provided for all of us. Ancestors, we pledge ourselves to continue to do work such that when you return, this place will be a better earth. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation. And finally, we'd like to ask you in our audience to think of one of your ancestors, someone who you would like to be with us this morning. On the count of three, ask that ancestor to come and be with us. One, two, three. Ancestors, come and get your drink. We say libation, libation, libation. It is good.
That people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
Oh, today. I'm not afraid, now I can say, get your bitch ass off of my phone. Please leave me alone. I am not your girl anymore. You need to watch your tone. Don't worry about who it is I'm fucking or who I am loving. Just know that it is not you. This isn't up for discussion. I wish you good luck, man, when it comes to you.
Way Listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Hotep and good afternoon, my brothers and sisters. Welcome to Black Sister Talk. So happy to have them back on the air with your host, Sister LaWanda Chambers. I'm so happy that they are back with us now. This is the Black Reality Think Tank Network of programs. This is our weekend edition, and it's called Black Sister Talk with LaWanda Chambers. So we're happy, so happy that she's here. This is a part of the TimeForAnAwakening.com platform, which is also a part of the Black Talk Radio Network. And so we're happy to be here. We have other programs that are part of this network that we'll talk about at the top of the hour. We are a call-in format. If you would like to call and join this conversation or ask questions, you can do so by calling area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, area code 215-490-9832. And you can join the conversation when Sister Chambers opens the line up for callers. We'd be happy to have you to do so. With that, I am going to turn the program over to your host, Ms. LaWanda Chambers. Good afternoon, Ms. Chambers.
Good afternoon, Dr. Rogers. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And I'm just happy to be back and able to talk with our listeners. And so today, on Black Sister Talk, I will be joined by guest host Josh Jermaine, and a little bit later today, guest host Michelle Moore, and we will be discussing the journey from boy to man. More specifically, we will be looking at the baby boy syndrome and how it breaks down the man in the family due to the lack of emotional intelligence. However, before we get into that discussion, we will go over the ancestral profile, which is very traditional and something we do on every show, and so we are not going to skip out on it today. Today we'll be talking about Diana Carroll, born in 1935 and deceased in 2019. Diane Carroll was an actress of stage, screen, and TV, known for her show Julia, and films such as I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. Who was Diane Carroll? Diane Carroll made a number of films during her career and was nominated for an Academy Award for Claudine in 1974. It wasn't until she was cast as the lead in Julia in 1968, however, that Carol became a bona fide celebrity. The role made her the first African-American woman to star in her own TV series. She was nominated for an Emmy for Julia in 1969 and won the Golden Globe Award in 1968. Actress and singer Carol Diane Johnson was born on July 17, 1935 in the Bronx, New York. She attended Manhattan School of Performing Arts and worked as a nightclub singer and model before making her Broadway debut in the House of Flowers in 1954. That year, she also made her film debut alongside Dorothy Dandridge and Carmen Jones. Carol made a number of films during her career and was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Actress for her work on Claudine in 1974. She starred in No Strings in 1962 and also appeared in I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings 1979. It wasn't until she was cast in the Julia in 1968, however, that Carol became that bona fide celebrity. That role made her the first African-American woman to star in her own television series. She was nominated for an Emmy and won a Golden Globe in 1968. She was well known for her role as the jet setter Dominique Devereaux on Dynasty from the 1980s.
Hello.
She received her third Emmy nomination in 1989 for her role on A Different World. Most recently,
Everything's all right. Yeah, because I was trying to finish something I was doing, and plus I didn't know how to work that.
She passed away on October 4th, 2019, in Los Angeles, California.
But anyway, no problem. You got your money.
After a long battle against cancer, she had been married four times, including her relationship with singer Vic Damone.
Yeah.
And has left behind a legacy of many accolades to go. She was our first African American actress to star in her own sitcom, where she did not play a domestic worker. And I thank Diane Carroll for her contribution to our society. And so, without further ado, you all, we want to say rest in power to Diane Carroll and move on with today's discussion. So, I hope everybody is doing well on this Saturday. I'm very happy that we are here and able to talk. I'm going to let them open up the lines a little bit later. But for the moving along purposes, I want to just introduce Josh Jermaine quickly so he can share with you guys a little bit about himself. And we'll keep moving with our discussion. So, Mr. Josh Jermaine, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, though. Hello, everyone. My name is Josh Jermaine, though. A huge advocate of mental health, especially in the Black community. You know, I'm just here trying to, you know, create change, though, in the community and make sure that we go forward and not backwards. That's the main goal.
Wonderful, wonderful. I appreciate you coming on today and talking with us about this baby boy syndrome. I know we opened up the show today listening to some Jane Aiko and Toni Braxton, and so we will chime in on that in just a little bit about how that connects with this baby boy syndrome and how it breaks down the man in the family due to the lack of emotional intelligence. This discussion is in no shape, form, or fashion happening to bash the male ego or identity. However, this conversation is one that is necessary to be had in our community because socialization has shown us over generations that men have been looked at to be dominant, in charge, protectors, breadwinners, and strong. But what happens when the man doesn't measure up to these social expectations? What happens when the man doesn't develop the emotional intelligence to deal with these social situations? Let's get into it. Let's talk about it. Let's break these barriers down and address self and take a long, hard look at self so we can begin to deprogram and change some of these behaviors in our homes. So first thing I think we should talk about on today is just really, what does it mean to be a boy in today's society? I think Mr. Jermaine would be a good person to chime in, and some of the fellows later as well, on what does that mean? What does it mean to be a boy today in 2020? Mr. Jermaine, you can chime in and share with me what it is, because I'm a woman, and of course I got my opinions and things that I would like to say, but you being the male on the show, the guest host, I want to kind of get a little bit more information from your perspective, and then I will chime in. And you know, I may disagree a lot, but who the hell am I? You are a man, so I'm going to listen, and I'm going to ask you these questions. So, what does it mean to be a boy in today's society?
I think from my experience being an African-American male in America, and also working with kids, you know, especially now in 2020, I can say that boys grow up too fast. I'll say they definitely grow up too fast, and I think a lot of times they have to do that in certain situations, giving up the fact that they probably wasn't getting the proper, you know, nutrients from their parents, or maybe the parents had an outdated view on life sometimes, though, and the kids feel like they wasn't getting the support from their parents, and they got to go figure it out on their own. I think that, you know, sometimes we grow up as boys in school, and we think that as being innocent, and then we turn to criminals, you know, just by society, and now the boy got to end up protecting his name, having respect for himself, having a reputation, you know, being liked by his peers, you know what I'm saying? It's more of a validation thing, I think, even when I was a kid growing up to where I'm at today, that, you know, it's all about you trying to be liked by your friends, make sure you be respected by your family when I was growing up. But I think in 2020, just due to music, due to influences in the community as far as being a low socioeconomic status, I think you got a lot of these boys up here just they're trying to mimic the father that they never had, you know, trying to mimic the role model though that they never had in their family, they had in their community, and a lot of these kids are just trying to figure it out. So I would say that being a boy in 2020, based off my observation, is really based off them being respected and making sure they're a man, meaning that they don't really have no emotions, and they can, you know, still be validated by their friends and on the streets, on the community. I think there's a lot of it is just boiling down to the fact that we don't really know what's going on, and I think some boys though end up getting into toxic situations though, as far as dealing with, you know, their female partner, having children, and becoming adulthood. Like what you said before about the baby boy syndrome, I think a lot of these kids though, and some adults, are still maintain on a teenage level or immature level than what the age are. So I think it's like the blind leading the blind, the young leading the lead. I mean, the young leading the youth. But I think being a born American is trying to figure out their way and know that we live in a society where we're not being respected, we're not being valued, and we feel like we got to do it on our own.
Very good. And so I got to agree with you, and especially being a mental health professional and working out in the community, and especially working with little boys and the family system, you know, and what I'm seeing is a lack of leadership in the home, a lot of misguided information. I see a big lack of men in the home. And there is no true representation in the household. You know, we look to our parents to be that guide. And so when that guide does not exist, the needs don't disappear because the guide don't exist. And what I heard you saying was a lot about the socialization and wanting to have that acceptance for friends. And so a good example I like to share is from a movie called All Day in a Night. And if you've seen All Day in a Night, it's a movie on Netflix. It was dropped May 1st, 2020. And it was starring Jeffrey Wright and Ashton Sanders. And so when I watched that movie, I saw a young man. First of all, they casted a dark-skinned male, which showed some representation that this, you know, this is a certain scheme or a certain kind of ideal or lifestyle a man that looks like him would live. That movie also showed the father who the young man was looking up to. His father was very much in the streets, very much on drugs, and so he was looking to his dad to be that guide. And long story short, all day and the night ends with the son ending up in the penitentiary with his father, you know. And so thinking about everything that you just said about this socialization, you can see this young man, you know, not getting that love that he thought he should have received from home. He went and sought that out in the street. You know, he was a young man. He had a girlfriend. He had a baby at a young age. He got involved with his friend. His friend gave him that emotional support and like, oh, I'm going to be there. Guess what? This brother went out here and killed somebody because of the sex, you know, strength of his friend. And so I'm telling that story for Circle just to say these things happen every day. Although that was a movie, I see this happening all the time. I know someone on the line who I'll have chime in later. I'm talking about seeing two generations in the prison system. She's going to go ahead and share how she has seen three generations in the prison system. And so I bring that up to say there is a cycle here. There's a pattern we have to address, because when the absence of the man in the home is not non-existent, we have boys out here who are looking to be in gangs. We have boys who are looking to receive love but don't know how to give that love. We have men who do not understand how to be loved or how to love themselves. And so I wanted to start the discussion off by talking about what it means to be a boy in today's society, because you hit the nail right on the head, Mr. Jermaine, when you said it's about validation, you know, and that's something that these little boys will be seeking out into manhood, which will create another bridge between this gap in this discussion of how all of these things connect. And I'm going to sum it up by saying a lot of these men that we're talking about when we say baby boy syndrome, we're basically talking about men who have not yet developed into a man. And so that baby boy syndrome is simply boys wanting to be men but have not quite developed into what it takes to be a man because they have no foundation of what that is. So, I'm gonna reach out and just have Ms. Bennett chime in and ask her quickly, what does it mean to be a boy in today's society? She works with children in the school system. So I think you'll be able to answer that. You raised how many boys, Ms. Bennett?
Seven boys.
Seven boys. Yes.
And you know, it's really important that a boy do have a mentor. Someone has to be there for him, because one thing I worried about, even though I was married and my husband, we separated, but I stayed as long as I could so my son could have the male image, even though it was not the best image for them to follow. But it actually takes two people, a mother and a father. And a lot of these kids, the mother, and I noticed, a lot of women who have sons treat their sons like daughters, and if they have daughter and son, they give the daughter more attention than they do the son, and the son wants this attention so bad that they can be stable. And so my thing is that family unit is what is so destructive for a young man when he do not have both, because he cannot learn to be a man by just a mother. And then I see a lot of boys turn very feminine who have been put over by their moms. They put on over the girls. The boys want to look like a girl, be a girl, so they can get attention. And I don't mean to start in any of this. It's just observation. So, and I mean, even when I'm working, I see some boys, I had to teach all girls Bible, but the boys want to come in, they're putting barrettes in their hair and say, I'm a girl. It's kind of crazy right now. And I would talk to these males and say, no, you cannot come in here for that reason. You're not a girl. So it's a very mixed up society. But I still say it takes a strong woman not to give more attention. And she's got two kids, one's a girl, one's a boy, giving them a lot of, giving that girl a lot of attention, and you just be strong. Oh, that don't hurt you. Boys hurt just like girls do. But it has gotten so far out, and so then they do take on this macho male approach. I mean, I've got one that don't want to listen to anything, almost 50 years old, played most of his life away trying to be like the people in the street. It's very hard because society plays a great role in this, and by our government labeling African-American males and women, too, as criminals, they do the criminal things. Like, you say I'm one, I'm going to do it. So it's not just the fact of mom and dad. It is society, too, that don't present things for them. Like now, in the schools, there's no cooking. There's no shop, no cooking classes, no sewing, nothing to help people to get something that they can hold on to as they grow up. They're going to grow up, but they have nothing. So you only have fast food restaurants in the city. No one is leading them in a direction for them to find where they are. So it's really hard. And then sex becomes the most comfortable outlet for them. And then it becomes the most difficult because now they're labeled as deadbeat dad. Because they're going back to what was happening like on the plantation back there where the man was a stud. So we got a lot of issues there. But where do you start? And everybody put programs together for girls, but hardly ever do they put programs together for males. So a lot of males in our society is going to have to take on a role to say, I'm going to do this. The fatherhood initiative that they have, I've seen they come into the schools when I worked at Ethan Allen and Milwaukee Security Detention Center. I worked with them, and they would come in and talk to them. But here we got males with, as they call them, serial dads. I worked with the father, the son, and the grandson. And that's terrible, all because they follow behind what the grandfather did and the son did in that. It was like, all three of them was in my group because I did like a case manager and I had to work with groups of people. It's a lot of issues, and I can only say the only way we're going to change this is to educate our society. We need to look back at our roles that we are performing. So it's a lot. Okay.
Well, thank you for that, Ms. Bennett. I appreciate it. And you're right, it is a lot, and it's not something that can be explained in one or two sentences. And so that's why I give you the opportunity to express yourself, because this is Black Sister Talk where you can breathe. And so sometimes you have to get it out before you can breathe. So I appreciate that. No, seriously, this is a deep-rooted issue. It is a cycle, and we're looking at boys, what it means to be a boy in today's society. We're looking at what it means to be a man in today's society. Okay, because we have to define these. We have to define that because a lot of the times, the boys, they just become an adult, right?
Right.
Be 30 years old and be grown is all get out. But you're still around here acting like a kid. And so that's something to express and say, hey, what does it mean to be a boy today? What does it mean to be a man today? Because if that's not something that has been talked about, we still got men running around here being boys. You know, so let's talk about this. What are the rites of passage? What are the rites of passage that a boy must complete to become a man? And so I know what it takes for a woman, you know, but I want to hear from the gentleman on the line. Can you chime in and explain or express to me what has been that rite of passage on your journey from boy to man? And where do you feel you are now? What needs to happen in society?
I think for me, I think the rites of passage, I think for boys nowadays is fighting and having sex and having a baby. You know, having a baby should be a rite of passage in manhood too. For the fact that now they got a baby, you know, now they can do it. And it can also be a passage of manhood by how many females they're sleeping with or how many, you know, do the friends encourage that? Or, you know, it's all with the friends. It's all about what the group is doing. So the group thing, you need to have about three or four girls. If you get five or six, then you win it. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the, and unfortunately, it's toxic patterns that lead to adulthood where a lot of these boys gonna grow up and have, you know, a lot of conflict with their woman partner and eventually with children. So it's unfortunate that it do come to a level where it can be dysfunctional, but I think the big rite of passage for males that I can think of is having a fight. Make sure you not never lose a fight. If you do lose a fight, you gotta fight them again till you win. I think you got the whole thing with sex, making sure that you are having sex as early as possible. I got to put that in there too. The early you have sex with women, though, the more you the man. You know, that's how some people see it in some communities. I think in some cases, though, you got some of the parents that are raising the kids up, though, and now want them to be the man of the house at 16 and 17 sometimes due to the fact that most of the men is not even in the house, you know. So the fact that the man out of the house, though, you got some moms that want the oldest kid to, you know, come in and try to make some money, and sometimes it can be selling drugs. That can be, you know, probably doing illegal activities. That can be having a criminal record. You know what I'm saying? Like, it seems like the most negative things that happen to black boys, though, is the rites of passage to become a man. I think the opposite end, though, that you got to start being more positive and start thinking about, have some vision on, you know, how can we see ourselves as adults a lot more. And I think a lot of the baby boy stuff that you talk about is a lot of that inner child that never grew up. You know, you growing up the whole time and, you know, and you trying to figure out life, and you never could be a kid, though, because you in a world where if you make one mistake, though, you can capitalize from it, even from a minor, you know. So it's a lot of factors that go into it, but I know for a fact, like, having a criminal charge, having sex with girls as early as possible, fighting and being aggressive, you know what I'm saying, though, is what makes you a man in what society we call today.
Exactly. You hit the nail right on the head. I just want to hear from you being a man and not Miss Chambers just saying what she know, which is true, everything you just said, especially about that fighting, sleeping with as many women as you possibly can, having children, going to jail. I mean, all of this is part of this vicious cycle. And what really ends up happening when we look at these things is we fail to realize the collateral damage that comes with these interactions or these quote-unquote rites of passage. And that's why I chose the picture that I chose for this flyer, for this promotion for the show, because when we're looking at how strong a man supposed to be and what a man is, we forget how socially this damages the women. You know, we're looking at multiple baby mamas. We're looking at instability in the household. We're looking at women lingering on about these men and brokenhearted and devaluing themselves, or sleeping with several men to find love, or being or feeling like they're loved by these men only temporarily because this man don't really know how to handle situations, lacks the ability to problem solve, and so the way he solves problems is just to get up and leave and go try again with somebody else, not ever looking at self and saying, man, what's wrong with me? Why am I hopping from relationship to relationship? That's not saying that's the issue. So I think you hit it right on the money when you said that criminal record and them having them babies. Those are that really stand out to me. What you say, Mr. Janae?
And not crying either, though. You know, a boy's really socialized not to cry. You know, whatever you do, don't show your emotions. You know, and a lot of times, though, they come out like a madman when they get to adulthood because nobody never told them, like, it's okay to process emotions, you know?
Bingo. It's not okay to cry. And this is something that I was going to touch on later, but let's talk about it right now. And when is it okay for a little boy to no longer cry? I remember seeing somebody in my family punch one of the little boys in the chest because they was crying. And it broke my heart because I'm like, he's just a little boy. Why would you punch that young man in the chest like that? And he said to me, be quiet. You don't know nothing about teaching no boy how to be no man. And I don't. So I shut up. But I look and I'm like, you could just see the cry just like stuck. He couldn't even, like, it's just caught in his throat. He couldn't even scream out. And that was just disturbing to me because there is, it seems like there's no place for a little boy to show that emotion. And like Miss Bennett said, these little boys want to be loved. And so socially, there's a lot of confusion, I think, inside of these gentlemen too. Because I don't know if it's safe to cry. I don't know if it's safe to have this emotion. I don't even know if it's safe to say anything besides I'm pissed off or I'm angry as hell. I mean, emotion of anger is easily to show. Very easy. I remember growing up and seeing little boys get beat up. And the boy go home and the dad beat his butt. You don't go out there and lose no fight, or you don't go out there and run away from no fight. I mean, when do a boy really get to just be a boy? And then do boys, or do men, when they become men, they continue to be that trapped little boy inside them. And so they have that man exterior to protect them. So when they become frustrated, they show that rage. You know, it's just raging. There's lots of rage. So I say this to say this. How does society, and let's take another look in another way to say this, how do white supremacy culture impact how the black man relate to himself and the community? How does that also add another layer to this? Because we have to remember, generationally, we're still experiencing trauma, and so we have a larger umbrella a socialization that says this is what a man's supposed to be versus the realization of what a man is in our culture based off of the resources and the access that is available to you. We've already identified that a lot of these men end up going to jail, dumping this emotional baggage on women. So let's talk about a little bit now about where some of these pressures come from before we go on our top of the hour break. Mr. Jermaine, you want to chime in and talk about a little bit of the pressures that have been placed on men in society about by white supremacy? What do you think about
that? Yeah, I agree. I agree with you 110%. I think white supremacy culture has a lot to do with the aggression, because I feel like aggression is more like our way of releasing, you know, defeat. And I won't say being lost, but when we look at slavery and we look at that transition from slavery, from after slavery to Jim Crow to where we at in 2020, black people never felt valued in this country. We never felt value in America. You know, no matter how many times you have radical black people out here trying to empower the community, it was always seen as looking at our leaders being castrated, getting killed. They try to put us into the fear, you know, and we always played into fear instead of, you know, playing to heal ourselves. What we can't look at the healing factors if, you know, we've been terrorized from the beginning to look at where we are at today. So I would definitely say that even from being lynched on the tree to where we are at today, I mean, we were 3/5 of a person, you know what I'm saying? We wasn't even seen as a human being, you know, so how can we learn how to have human feelings, you know, in 2020? You know, it's just a lot of barriers that we have to go through, but we have to look at the TV, look at media, look at the narrative that white people give us. The white people give us narratives on media all the time about us being super predators, like Clinton would say, or, you know, vigilantes, or, you know, thugs, or, you know, drug abusers, you know, all these narratives that we use in a negative light that if we do, like, white people, though, white folks get seen the same way, but we always get stigmatized by media. So I think media plays a big part. I think hip-hop music glorifies it in a way where we really don't have things around us that's empowering us. If anything, everything is exploiting us in the white supremacy culture, But I think it goes back to the low self-esteem and the lack of self-value, self-worth, because we can only socialize by what's around us. We can only look at, you know, we can only treat ourselves how others treat us at times, you know, and we get it. I know for myself, being a black man in America, I feel like a lot of times, though, I have to kind of go against the status quo. I got to become the radical or the rebellious sometimes, though, just to empower myself as a black man and empower other black folks in the community. So I just think that white supremacy plays a major role, because we're looking at the pressure that has been put on black folks, though, and we and it looks like aggression towards each other. But it's really just the fact that the white supremacy white supremacy have had their knee on our neck for so long, is that we don't even know how to release the pressure to even live whole.
Come on. Because what happens is you become programmed to believe it is that way, and it is so. And so over generations, you become socialized to be timid and to walk on eggshells in this society, because you are already programmed to know that you don't fit or you're not good enough. And so when we look back at the collective in the society, in our communities, and we say, well, man, we should be a lot tighter than that. We really not. You know, you got division in your own homes. You got dads that don't like their kids and will say, F that boy. And that boy will be sitting in the doorway. You got kids. I mean, this is deep. When you think about it, this is going on because, well, let me just put it like this. We want people to treat us better than we treat ourselves. And so I'm not saying we don't deserve to be treated better. I'm just saying we need to start treating ourselves better. We need to start treating each other better, because this socialization is a continuation of generational trauma that has been given to us. It's in our blood. It is in our spirit. And so we have to recognize that first. That would be a first step into moving forward into positive racial socialization. We have to look to be positive racially socializing our young men. We have to educate them on the front end that this is a thing. And that thing I'm talking about is systemic racism. It's around you. It's not just at work. It's at school. It's in everything that you do. But you have to explain it in such a way that it doesn't defeat that young person's character, okay? You have to give them the strategies and the tools that they would need to survive it. Because, and we're going to talk about it just a little bit right now, but at the top of the hour, we return with this discussion, really going into detail. Because when we're talking about little boys and men, we're not just talking about heterosexual little boys and men. We're also looking at homosexual boys and men and transgender boys and men. And so we really have to take a look at how that also has its own levels, right? It has its own socialization that's going on. And so some confusion is definitely going on in the community. And that self-hate is deep in the community. And so we really have to take a look at that and say, how do I show love? You know, that's what we're missing, some love and care in these households with these young men. We're missing true skills on how to communicate with one another. Communication is key. And that's one thing I see being a challenge in the community, just talking with one another. Where's that love? Where's that love? Where's that appreciation? What you think about that, Mr. Jermaine?
I definitely agree with you 110%. I would think that not only communication, true communication, you know, about our fears, our failures, our setbacks, you know, things that did not work out the way that you thought was going to work out. You know, it's like you know, I know even being with boys, maybe how girls are too, is that when you get around your group of friends as boys and or men at one point, that everybody like to talk, but are we talking authentically? You know, are we being honest about, you know, things that we feel that we have no control over? You know, that's the important piece that we have. And I think that some adults, you know, I think some kids, we can't look at the adults for not having the answers because it's a generational trauma, you know. So they have been traumatized just as much as the younger generation is, though. So it's like we don't have that conversation. It's like we got a lot of these, you got a lot of these boys out here, though, trying to live on the outside because the inside is dying. You know, the inside is dead. And they just looking for anything to make them feel like something. You know what I mean? But I think that if we had the conversation, though, about talking about things that, you know, probably happened in our family and our parents, you know, even our siblings, you know what I'm saying? We, each generation got to teach the next generation. But we got to stop teaching us how to reinforce trauma and get to healing.
Exactly, exactly, because it's definitely reinforcing, the trauma. Just looking at white supremacy culture, just looking at the knee being put on a man's neck, and from white supremacy, and those pressures that come into the household, right? So mm-hmm. you look. Stress is outside of the household, coming into the household, the woman doing her thing, her role, she is now taking on the emotional weight mm-hmm. of everything this man has been through, and the woman role and how she has been socialized is to keep on moving. Don't stop. No, just keep on moving. That's how women are socialized. They keep moving. They take it all, and they're supposed to respect their man and be submissive and all of this and all of that. And so we're looking at not only broken men, but we're looking at broken women.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so this also can be a reason. This could also be a reason for why women doing a lot of the things they doing out in the community. This could be a reason for why women don't feel love. This could be that reason why women don't trust. And what we gotta realize is that, hell, some of these men don't trust neither, but just don't know how to admit that. And shit, you and me, some of these men, they'll tell you right off the bat. They'll let you know they some a rolling stone. They'll let you know they ain't no good. And then the woman was still accepted. Why is that? We at the top of the hour. You guys go ahead and take you a water break, go to the bathroom, do whatever you need to do. But I appreciate you tuning in to Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe. Go ahead and call in if you want to breathe. We'd be happy to hear from you. Our number is 215-490-9832. Thank you for your continued listenership.
When I became a man, I put away childish things. But before I became a man, I didn't always fit the shoes of a king. I was a child trying to find his way. And the toys I played with kept my eyes occupied and left my mind in a lustful, boyish frenzy. And my playmates had long legs, short skirts, and soft skin. And they cared enough to lie down and wallow with me often. Jezebel turned out to be my very best friend. I'd look in her eyes before ever seeing the sunrise, every time I paid her a visit and slept in. Before I became a man, I saw how God made Adam from dust. So likewise, I tried to make love out of lust. I didn't know any better. I was taught by example, let your mouth spit game, but never let your heart say much. I treated his daughters like beauty pageant contestants, and there would be zero return on their investments, and Proverbs 31 was never a criteria for my selections. Mind you, this was before I became a man. This was about the time that I took notes from a father figure who really didn't know how to be a father. Go figure. About the time that mom was a punching bag because he was too afraid to take his frustrations out on the world instead by simply enduring affliction. Yet, during addiction, he could go 12 rounds against the most violent screams of, "Stop! Stop!" And he was undefeated. He always won. And I would stand in plain sight, hoping Daddy sees. Because all I could say at the time was, "Daddy, please. Mom didn't deserve what she got just because she didn't satisfy Daddy's needs." Before I became a man, I would unlock Daddy's curse, free myself, and throw away Daddy's keys. I allowed anger to set up a construction company inside. And bitterness never rested. It left no time wasted. And whether Daddy loved me or not, all I could regurgitate was hatred. I became allergic to showing any form of compassion. Before I became a man, I was much shorter. Not just in height, but in spiritual insight. Because I never had a picture, nor did Pixar ever have a film to show me what God's man really looked like. But when I became a man, I learned how to love God right back. And even though I'm good at falling short of the glory, I reflect on my story, and through my praise, I'll self-publish a testimony. When I became a man, I learned how to cry. Because I'm not ashamed of my tears, neither will my fears muffle the groaning in my spirit. Since I became a man, I'm no longer afraid of the dark. I'll wrap my fingers around James 5:16, confess, pray, and heal my heart. I've discovered that there are medicinal qualities down the corridor of introspection. When I became a man, I learned how to love her. My Esther, my Ruth. I learned to honor her like she was Jesus' mother, because one day she'll be pregnant with the seed that will transport my legacy, so that my God and my name would both have longevity even after they bury me. I couldn't love her before because I wasn't able. My insecurities and my perfectionism had me looking at the next best player checking in at the scorer's table. How could I possibly be her covering as an umbrella with holes in it? But I learned to love her like I ought to, because I want him to be my father and my father-in-law, since that's his daughter. When I became a man, I learned to love my brother. I'll share my heart, my hug, and my hallelujah. Because a hug and a hallelujah without my heart leaves room for his spirit to respond, "I never knew you." I became a man so that until he became a man, he can see and name a man who picked up the gospel, 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 and put the toys away. I became a man.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Good afternoon. We are back. Very inspiring program tonight, this afternoon, rather. Very good conversation. For those of you who are listening via the internet, you can call at area code 215-490-9832 and give us your comments or your suggestions. We are here with Black Sister Talk, being hosted by Sister LaWanda Chambers with her guests. I'm so happy that this conversation is moving forward in the way that it is going. Thank you so much for your participation. We are part of the TimePointAwakening.com radio platform, which is a part of Black Talk Radio Network. We are here every Saturday afternoon at our weekend edition from 3 to 5 p.m. Central, 4 to 6 Eastern. So we thank you so much for being here. There are other programs of the Black Reality Think Tank family that are part of the Time for an Awakening Network, but there is a cadre of very dynamic discussion programs and programs to sort of empower our community and give us that platform for conversation that's so much needed, you know, as we address the many issues that face us on a day-to-day basis. So we are so thankful for you. I'm going to just give you a brief rundown of those programs. On Monday, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. Eastern to 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Central to 12 p.m. Central, we have a program called African Perspectives, African Perspectives. And the host of that is Brother Osiemi Adelabu. So happy he's now convalescing from a very brief illness, but he's back and should be back with us, I assume, on Monday. We thank him so much, appreciate him so much. But that's African Perspectives every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 o'clock Eastern to 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 12 Central as well. That's every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And then on at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern time to 8, we have a program called Acres of Diamonds. Acres of Diamonds with host Brother Jihad Ahmed. Acres of Diamonds every Monday here, right here, at the Time for an Awakening Media Network. And then at 8 o'clock to 9 p.m. Eastern time, we have Black Therapy Central. Black Therapy Central with Dr. Queen Mother Cambone and Sister Nataki Cambone. Again, Black Therapy Central, which is from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Time for an Awakening Network system. And then every first and third Mondays of the month, every first and third Mondays of a month, from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we have a program with conversations on reparations. Conversation on reparations every first and third Monday of the month from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern. And then on Tuesday from 7 to 9 Central, 8 to 10 Eastern, we have the Black Reality Think Tank with your host, yours truly. That's every Tuesday evening from 7 to 9 Central, 8 to 10 Eastern, the Black Reality Think Tank. And then on Thursday, one of our Black Reality Think Tank Network programs, called After 7. It's from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 to 8 Central. After 7 with host Shani B. And it's a very dynamic conversation with young millennials who are talking about things that impact their lives, children, families, and other systems of our community and network that are very, very critical, very, very critical for survival. So that's After 7, every Thursday, from 7 to 9 Eastern, 6 to 8 Central. And then on Friday, from 8 to 10 Eastern, Time for an Awakening, with the host of this network, who is the executive director for the Time for an Awakening system, Brother Elliot. And he's joined with his co-host, Brother Richard, every Friday evening, from 7 to 9 Central, 8 to 10 Eastern. And then on Saturday, right now, where you're hearing 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Black Sister Talk every Saturday. Black Sister Talk with host Sister LaWanda Chambers. And then following this program, from 6 to 8 Central, 7 to 9 Eastern, we have a program called The Elders of Sankofa. Dynamic discussion with Brother Alfonso Watkins. Elders of Sankofa, every Saturday evening from 6 to 8 Central, 7 to 9 Eastern. And then on Sunday, finally, we have 7 to 9 Eastern, 6 to 8. We have Time for an Awakening again with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot every Sunday evening. And you can look forward to some other programs that are coming forth. We have some other programs that are going to join the Time for an Awakening Media Network. We have one about black farmers. where the black farmers will be coming forward and talking and addressing issues that impact them as well. So this is our lineup. Again, thank you so much, our audience, for your participation and your patronage of our programs. We'll continue to try to bring you things that are very critical and important for our community. And so with that, I am going to turn the program back over to our host of Black Sister Talk, Sister LaWanda Chambers. Ms. Chambers.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for that, Dr. Rogers, and I'm happy you were able to share that lineup with us all. Sounds like we got a lot of great shows to check out and address, and while we're cooking and cleaning and, you know, take some time to check out all the programs and give yourself permission to allow yourself to be programmed from your own people.
Ms. Chambers, if you allow me, I did forget.
Important to us.
Ms. Chambers, if you allow me, I did forget one thing. All of our programs are archived. you can go to our archive at www.timeforanawakening.com. Our program tonight that you're listening to right now will be archived in about an hour. And so you'll have an opportunity to hear this program again. And all of our programs, just go to www.timeforanawakening.com, pull down the podcast portal, and listen to any of the programs that have aired since we have been on this air. So thank you, Ms. Chambers. We appreciate for that. Sorry for the interruption.
Oh, no problem, no problem. Thank you. Again, thank you, Dr. Rogers, for sharing that information. And so what I will do is share this today's show on all social media outlets, and I just ask that our viewers go ahead and share those links with your friends just in case they were not able to listen during the time that we air the show. We still want you guys to be able to participate. So without further ado, let's get back into the discussion. We left off talking about how this socialization not only is just affecting our boys or boys in the heterosexual realm, but it also affects little boys who are homosexual, and it creates a whole nother issue in our community as well amongst the LGBT community. And so I think that we also have to address that as well. Ms. Bennett and Mr. Jermaine, if any one of you guys want to chime in and share your point of view on that perspective, I'd like to hear it before I share mine.
I think there's still that socialization part, because, you know, a boy could be anything that he want to be except not gay. He could be somebody that could be selling grades in school. He could be somebody that could be out here, got a police charge, though, got a record. I mean, he can't get a record as a kid, but be charged at least, and, you know, having to go to court and deal with services. I mean, you could do anything as a boy except being that. And I think sometimes that's internalized by probably a lot of childhood sexual abuse that I think is really going unnoticed in the black communities. You know, I think it's good to be loyal to your family, but I think not only do we got to look at the relationship between men and women individually, but I think we got to look at how we learn these relationship skills from our family. You know what I'm saying? And I think that plays a big part into why the black community does have a homophobic view about it, as gay people being the only problem in the community, as we continue to keep overlooking, you know, a lot of issues that lead to us feeling that anger, or us feeling like it's bad to be that, you know, when in reality, you let a lot of these boys out here, they got a lot of problems with communicating their feelings and not really understanding themselves, though, and now they coming out confused, thinking that they are gay just because they don't got the words to express how they truly feel. So I think it plays a big part, but I really do think that behind everybody wanting to, you know, gay shame, you know, guys and calling fags, calling homosexuals, and, you know, talk about, I think that's a lot to do with childhood trauma in the family, and I think it got a lot to do with black people trying to live in a society where we try to feel on top of things, though, when we got so many barriers, though, that break us down. And I feel like sometimes we feel so defeated that we project that on other people instead of trying to figure out how we should go about our own situation. So I think there's a lot of projection on that, too, is that, you know, you see the people that are so, you know, homophobic towards other people, though, but sometimes that could just be an insecurity that they feel about themselves, you know. So I think you're right. I mean, even the LGBT, all black boys should deserve to feel valued. All black kids deserve to feel heard. All black kids still deserve to feel accepted no matter what they do. You know, it's just unfortunate that we got a lot of these families that don't have the platform for these males and females to flourish, you know, so that they have a healthy perception about themselves no matter who they with.
And just hearing you say that, a few things come to mind, you know, and we're going to touch bases on each one of them. The first one is the compartmentalization piece, right? Let's look at this. Is gay separated or any LGBT, is that separate from being the boy or being the man? Is that separate from that? And if it is separate, how does that affect your socialization of your idea of man? And the reason I'm bringing this up because it depends really heavily on how you are socialized to think. A lot of people that grow up in the poverty-stricken areas or inner city, they have a certain idea about what a man's supposed to be and how you're supposed to act. And so when you don't see a man acting tough, hard, or strong, you automatically think that brother is gay or he's strange, you know, something ain't right with him over there because he don't present these things. And then looking at the compartmentalization piece of socialization and saying, okay, this is who a man is supposed to be, so I can be strong, tough, a gangbanger, drug dealer, you know, I could still keep up with those rites of passage of a man of the fighting and being aggressive and having babies and, you know, having a lot of women, but you might develop that moniker of being called trade, is what they would call it in the gay community, or the LGBTQ community, they would call it trade. They would call it a trade in the in that community. And so when we're looking at that idea of what it means to be a man, we got some men that are looked at as tough who are gay. You kind of chime in on that, Ms. Bennett? Or
hello. You know, this is a really tough one to go on because to say what a person is and who they are still deals with the socialization that they're coming from, because there is a lot of anger, and I don't want to step on nobody's toes out there that's listening, but a lot of anger, and it comes from socialization, because a lot of them make fun of women, the ones who want to be a woman, the ones who want to be the man, and they have this I want to say twisted idea of what's going on. So it's a really tough one because it all boils down, how do we treat each other like human beings? How do we, as a community, how do we respect each other? Because what goes on in a person's private life, they have to make a decision because it's something that's bothering them. This is something they would really have to answer. Why are you angry? And people say, because they're going to say, because people don't accept the way we are. And I have asked questions of some that I have known. And it's like the world's out to get them. So was the world out to get them when we was a little boy? When they seek comfort and sex? Did they get touched by someone and cause them to go down this road? So it's like, if you're not there, you can't really speak for them. Because they do have a voice. And absolutely, it's going to be up to them to make that decision and can explain why. We never, you know, I say like, still comes back down wanting to be loved. and and socialization of a lot of these things, because there is a lot of people that pedophiles that start this whole line with girls and boys. The question that I have asked of people that are of that persuasion, this has always been the case. And so then the argument, so I was born this way, I've always felt like this, but really we all were born a certain way, and when that sexuality age comes up, you see what I'm saying? So
I hear what you're saying. Just say it, Lucille, just say it.
Well,
see, this is the thing. This is why these conversations be so hard to be had, because we take ourselves back and we trying to be all sensitive and, you know, walking on eggshells. We need to say it, because we all have experiences as Black people in this community, these ideas, you know, and we got to be real about it. You know, it's okay. See, first of all, Ms. Chambers going to accept anybody LGBTQ, purple, Black. If you tell me you're green and blue, I'm going to be like, how you doing, Mr. and Mrs. Green and Blue? So I accept everybody. So we having this conversation about loving these people, right?
Yes.
So all are people. So they're not separate from people. They're people too. And so let's talk about that.
But you know what?
Because it's painful for them, I'm sure.
Yes.
But you know what I think it is, though? I think a lot of times, though, we're not educating ourselves to think for our individual thinking. We let a lot of things think for us, though, instead of us making a decision to think for ourselves. You know, when we sit back and think about homophobic in the culture, we got to think about religion. Religion play a huge part in that. You know what I'm saying, though? Because, you know, religious people feel judgmental towards it, because they feel like you're going to hell. You're doing the devil's work. You know, it can be society and politics. That a lot of Black people feel like a lot of these politicians are putting gay rights over Black rights. You know what I'm saying, though? Mm-hmm. That's bringing a lot of hostility in the Black community. We got to look at what we are watching and what we are seeing and to dictate if we're thinking or something thinking for us.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now, program.
Yes. The socialization, once again, because when it's about treating a person as a human being, and when we treat them as a human being and build a relationship with them. I remember when I was in middle school, there was a young man that was different, and he walked and he talked, and some boys couldn't stand it. And I think about halfway into the school year, the North Division, they killed him. But he was the nicest person. I mean, he would help you with anything. So it's like when it comes down to it, then, you know, I still would say we need someone to represent themselves and not be angry at the world and the people that's talking to them, because I think half of it is the non-acceptance of what they've made a choice. Then I like to go to people, why did you make that choice? And then it's like, if when you come from the Bible, one of the things that I do understand that the Bible says, all sin is sin.
Mm-hmm.
And when they put that under there, so then I don't care if you are having, this is me, if you have
come on now, say it.
Outside of marriage, then how do they look at you as a sinner? They say, oh,
come
that's
on.
Wrong. But, but, and because I'm in there, but there are a lot of homosexuals in the church, and it's like,
tell it, Lulu, tell it.
Don't bring just like if you don't bring the world in the church, you come here for your soul. That's the difference that I'm talking about. When you start trying to change people to be your way, that's when I think unfairness come in. Just accept them, and it's up to God, because there is. God is up there. He will change your heart. I know homosexuals that have changed their lives and made a decision. Man got 14 kids. It was about sex. It was about sex, and when he got a hold of who he was, how long it took him to dress up like a woman, how long it took him to do certain things, he realized he let it go, and it was within his heart he had to change like everybody out here. They got to change from within and get a relationship with the Lord, and I have to say it because that's who I am. I thought I had to be beat up all the time. But, I mean, I accepted beatings from my husband until one day the light came on. The light came on in my head. Hey, you don't deserve that. So it's like sin is sin, righteousness is righteousness, and righteousness will always win out in the end if you treat a person right, no matter who they are. So that's
exactly.
It.
Yeah. And I can co-tell off that too, though, by saying I think more importantly it's not so much about the people that you are with. The most important relationship you have with yourself is with yourself, you know, and how we for ourselves is truly how we relate to others and what we tolerate from others. You know what I'm saying? It's really a true tale of how you see yourself, you know. And I think that no matter who you with, you know, depending on LGBT straight or not, toxic traits are toxic traits. You know what I'm saying?
And
able to look at ourselves, though, for how we see ourselves, though, that will fix any relationship we have with anybody, including family. You know what I'm saying? Anybody. Yeah. So we got to look at that part first and foremost, you know, because we got to look at, there's many levels to it, you know what I'm saying? But I think... so much about having a heterosexual homo, it's all about, are you picking the right people for you? And I think heterosexuals, women, males can all relate to that, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's just, like you said, it's just really about taking a look at self, and both of you know me very well, and I'll tell you, any day of the week, we teach others how to treat us.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you treat yourself is a huge reflection on your own self-esteem and what you think and feel about yourself. And so those who are aware of themselves, they can see that in others when they are secure with who they are. And so as a community, it's kind of challenging to become secure with who you are. And then sometimes those who do become secure with who they are, it's kind of scary because they have accepted that things ain't going to change, and sometimes that's not always good because there is a possibility to make a change. And so that's something that needs to be looked at too. Let's talk a little bit more about this self-hate, because what ends up happening is this internalization. Right? When we're battling this compartmentalization of not even just being LGBTQ, but okay, here I am, a man in society. Do I separate sexuality? Is my sexuality part of my manhood? Because as we look, like I said, as we look at the rites of passage, sleeping with several women become part of that. This is what it takes to be a man. And so, when your desires are not just for women, that kind of creates this self-hate over who I am as a man. I don't identify with myself. I don't like myself. So that's a part of it. And so the question I'm going to pose to you guys is, why is self-hate so prevalent in the Black community? And what are some solutions to overcome these barriers? I know we talked about the love, but I really want to look at, again, some positive racial socialization that we can take back and use in the community. I know you'll be using this, Ms. Bennett, in the school system. And Josh Jermaine, I know you'll be using this in the social service spectrum, as will I. And so I think it's important that we go about this in an approach where we are kind of looking at all these different domains, where we're talking about the family system, where we're talking about the education system, we're talking about community outreach programs and things of that nature for providers who may be listening and servicing children in the community. Mm-hmm. What does that positive racial socialization look like when we're looking at self-hate in our community?
Right.
That's a lot to unpack.
Let's unpack it. Let's unpack it, because it's a lot, but it is a lot. this is not something that is a quick thing, but you say, oh, how I'm going to fix it. No, because fixing it starts now, and it needs to occur consistently. We're talking about some habit-changing ideas. Habit-changing. One thing I would say about the racism on the school-wide level, right, we need to have education in the school that is going to show these little boys and girls who they truly are. Okay? Who they truly are. And we cannot erase the fact that slavery was a thing.
Right.
Okay? Slave, we are the new slaves. It has been upcycled, recycled, and downcycled, and upcycled again. You know, this is continuing to happen, and we need to wake up, open your eyes. I know change is hard. I know it. But you got through COVID, people. And so I want you to know that we're still getting through COVID, right? And you can do this, too. Because you got number time on your hands and you're at home. And it's time to lock and load. Them babies is about to start school. Some, you guys, on Monday. And some, the 1st of September. And so use this as an opportunity to hone in on your family. Hone in on your little boys and your girls. Because this emotional weight is continuing to damage our communities. It's damaging our communities when little boys go to prison and grow up to be men in prison. This is damaging our communities when boys have 5 and 6 baby mamas and women are fighting at barbecue because they didn't know you was inviting that baby mama and I didn't like that one. And all sorts of just mess, just really mess, but dysfunctional. And so it's time to take a look at these are dysfunctional behaviors. It's what it is. Dysfunctional. It's crabs in a barrel type behavior.
Yeah.
It's misery you know, type behavior.
You know, one of the things is that, like I said, all people deserve to be treated fairly. And not to judge them by their outer appearance and things. You remain who you are. Take a lot of hatred that has been taught in this country over the years. And those people come into our school system and they just want to put it out there and they don't want to touch. I remember one school I was at where the teacher, if you were dark, those 4 kids were not getting what they need, the boys and the girls. And then when the lighter kids came, they was like, oh, what's the matter? And you could see the standoff. The kids, we got to teach parents how to love their kids and to love themselves. I used to close a lot of my circles when I had working in the prison. Anywhere I go, I shake them with, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself, I love all of me. And when you can love yourself, then you can do what the Bible said about, you know, and it says, love thy God with all thy heart, soul, and strength and mind. And it says, love thy neighbor as thyself. But that has been, love thy neighbor is what's been cut out. That's why there's so much pain, because people, even the news media, I say, well, we really need to have, it needs to be people on there of all races representing and not just show blacks all the time. This goes back to a political thing. The 13th Amendment, where they labeled us as slaves again, that if we break any law and the laws they created, we go to jail for, they don't. So there's a lot of infrastructure that needs to change that could change some of the things out here. There's always going to be good and bad, but we're not their judge. And I have to share with you something. One of my sons that had gone to jail, and he was up where Jeffrey Dahmer was. And my son had told me, he says, Ma, I cannot forgive myself for killing a man. And I'm bringing this out because it's a pretty deep piece. And my sister lived in an apartment building where Jeffrey Dahmer was and all that going on, and she was very much traumatized. But it was very expensive back then to talk on the phone. And my son would call, and I had an allowance of how much. He said, Mom, I need you to talk to somebody. Really important, Mom. It's really important. I said, son, I can only talk to you because I don't have money, and I would rather hear from you and know that you are a good mom. This is so important. And the next thing I hear the man's voice come and say, hello, ma'am, this is Jeffrey Dahmer. Well, all the news media, all the things have been said, it started at my feet, got to my knees. Well, I just want to blast this man. But I couldn't. It's like God just stopped me. And I said, he said, it's what you, but your son told me that God can forgive me for anything. I said, that's true. And we went on and shared the gospel. And he said, thank you very much. And he wanted to be baptized. You know, he got baptized, and two days later, they killed him. But I want to say this, is that the media blew it up, and there's stuff that came out afterwards. This probably come out another 10 years, that someone was paying them to take those body parts and sell them on a black market. There's so much out there happening, but yet the police put it this way, that he was getting these homosexual boys. People didn't pay much attention. The police, when the boy was yelling, the police didn't even pay him any attention, and then he was one of those victims. From the neighborhood, all people from all races was in this mess. But my whole point was is that we cannot allow the hatred that media puts on a person. You want to know why. We all have to play like a therapist, that we care and willing to listen to what they want to ask, because I almost hung up the phone.
If who it you changes, like, who almost hung up on you?
Huh?
I said, who you telling? I almost hung up on you, girl. Come on, tell it. Tell it, Lulu.
But the reason I'm saying this is that God will put things in front of for you. If you're true to handle it, you got an ear. An ear you have to hear. Communication. And that is something that do not happen in our community. And I want to add, this is a little bit backwards what we were talking about male socialization. I remember when my husband did not have a job, and we lived out there in Brown Deer, and there's this private club we belonged to. And when we, after we got in and we went there, and the first thing these white guys were asking, hey, man, what kind of job you got? My husband he just became so evil because, you know, they were all talking about their jobs and what they do. Okay, y'all got time to be out here right now? They wanted to know. So a lot of things is that the status for a man is work. It was started in the garden. It is having some type of job that he can take care of his family. And, you know, the wife can be that Proverbs 31 woman and take care of the family and go work in the community, bring things back and help. But that is not the case. And then I remember, I don't know what year it was, it might have been the 70s, the article came out and said, the black woman is the backbone of the society. Now, do you know how many men that destroy, to take away their manhood? And we know that man comes first. Man, he was the first one in the garden. And that's why I'm talking from my perspective, because everybody don't believe this. But I do. And so now you have a society that's right in putting woman first, doing all this stuff, and it just has led to a total destruction of our community. There's no trust. Men won't trust women. Women won't trust men. They'll have the sex, and the kid is born, and nobody's there for the kid. So with my job, and this is why I wanted to teach, I show love to all my students. I have an ear for them to tell me, and I love the way they will come, and I have an ear for the parents to say, look, you got to raise that child. I don't care what they're doing. It starts with you. A teacher cannot do her job if that child has never been able to sit still and learn, and that starts with the parents, teaching them their ABCs. Just like this whole thing, people want their kids at school, even in these dangerous times, and then some don't want them there. And it's like, okay, but how would you feel if your child was the one that came home with that COVID and gave it to everybody in the house?
They don't got the ability to think like that, Lulu. If they thought like that, we'd have a lot more black people saving some money and making a lot of more conscious financial decisions. But we need to get to that.
That's how I give back to the community when I have the private talks with the parents. And people are afraid to talk to parents. If you got a child, I mean, I've West Division, which is now Milwaukee School of Arts, I was there and I had to mediate a couple of cases where the boy was liking one boy and the boy didn't like him. I've seen it. It wasn't, you don't have that much of a stuff. Two people will fight over somebody, but theirs is a different kind of fight. And I had to sit there, and the grandmother had no idea that her son was a homosexual. She couldn't understand it. That's why I said this is a very tough subject, because some people have closed their eyes, and they've got to have these talks with their children instead of letting them grow up and run out the house, leave home, go move in with somebody. They're not the right person. Move in with another person. There's a lot of dynamics open here that since we're not of the persuasion, we really cannot talk on it like that. We need them to talk on their issues and open up. And it's like, look, you can live, you can live without. What can you live without? Sex is the only thing you can live without. You can't live without food. Can't live without water. Okay? Can't live without money.
I dare you to go tell that to one of them baby boys. They'll tell you they don't need no water. Baby boys, I don't need none of that. I need a woman.
That's why they be laying in the emergency room. Because when I was working in the boys' group home, every week I had a boy had to go there and get hydrated because they was dehydrated. So they can tell me
they want to get hydrated, Lulu.
Yeah, but I had to have them stop giving them those pills too.
Lulu, they can get some Zuma if they want to be hydrated. These young brothers will tell you quick as heck, ain't no way I need no water. I mean, even the old men in the nursing home, they'll be in there talking about some, all I want for my last wish is a woman. Please believe me, they ain't asking for no water. They don't want no water. That thing run deep. But what I want to say to you, Ms. Lulu, and you can breathe on Black Sister Talk, but I just want you to challenge yourself to look at yourself as the backbone of the community and look at everything that you have been through in life and see that you have several examples of you being the backbone of the community, of the family, of the many leadership teams you have been a part of, and recognize that most men do not have the emotional intelligence to handle the many challenges that women conquer. We give life. We bring life into this world. Can you imagine a man having to bring life into this world? He has the easiest thing to do was to ejaculate. He ain't carrying no baby for that much.
But it still takes two. And that's why that woman has to build that man. She has to help build him, and he has to help build her.
Why do the women have to build the men, Lulu? Why is it that the women have to build the men? And I just want you to take a minute and just think about what I'm finna say. Because we're looking at this generationally, right? We're not looking at us over here in Africa. We're looking at us over here in America. We're looking at us over here having white people telling us what to do since for the beginning of time here for us, as far as we know, that they tell us. Because they don't tell the truth. They tell you that you've been a slave, you picking cotton, you are taking care of our babies, right? We raising the white children, and the man is getting raped by the white man. See, that's the narrative they don't want to share, too. Not only were they raping our women, they were raping our men.
True. I've talked about that.
This is not to be ignored. This is not to be ignored. They have been not only raping our women, they have been raping our men. And so that is generationally an issue. Our women, when we got the chance to be in the home with the man, the woman has to think about her man being raped by the same captor that raped her. These are things that are not talked about. That needs to be talked about. This is why we have hate. You got a trifecta relationship that you can't even begin to understand, and then you having babies with your husband and they getting snatched away from you. Come on now, that's not to be ignored here.
That has a very much to do with the socialization, and one of the big issues of the woman always feeling like she has to come to the man's rescue. Oh, you the man of this house, you know, trying to stroke his ego. He don't even know how to be the man of this house. He don't even know how to do these things. You trying to build somebody up that don't know how to go to work in 2020. We working with men who don't know how to be men or want the easy way out.
Right.
Okay, that's what we're looking at. And so, no, I don't think any more women need to be trying to build up men in 2020. This is something we got to look at and say, get up, brother.
When I say that, I know you brought it up, but when I say that, it's like, okay, encouragement, but then don't go do the job for him. Because today we got too many women that have the house, the car, and he come in, and when he get tired, he move on. And I had to teach this to some kids I was working with getting their GED. And I just told them the facts. Okay, you live in one girl, she got a baby. How many other kids you got? How do you know I got some more kids? I said, it shows. It's from your look, what you're saying, your conversation.
How many kids?
You have not taken responsibility for yourself. And see, that's why I'm not with my husband, because I said, well, you got to take responsibility. I can't do all this. I can only do the part that I was built to do. And I could take care of my family because I proved it after I left. I had to get an education. I took them with me. I trained them. And I have all boys, and they send them off to go their ways. And it's like, it is, everybody have to encourage, because if you don't, then they start encouraging each other in the wrong way. We got kids today encouraging kids. Like take all these baby showers. Girl have another baby. Kids putting it together, and they think all that's fun, but that child's not being reared up. It needs a mama and a dad. Nobody can do it by themselves. And we've had almost 30 years, maybe 40, where this has not been taking place. And I agree.
Come on,
I'm not going to take up for that man, but I'm going to say you need to take responsibility. And if you don't, then you got to go.
Because hello, you can't do it. Hello, how about that?
That's what I'm
saying. How about
saying,
when you come to the relationship, you have something to offer?
Yes.
And it's going to build up people who are damaged goods.
That's real.
Because I'm not making no excuses for you. Mr. Jermaine?
Yeah, and I think we need more women like you that can acknowledge and advocate for yourself to make sure that ain't nobody going to do no emotional labor, you know? I think in 2020, I definitely agree that the women are leaders of the family, though, and I feel as men, though, our responsibility, if we are going to uplift these women, though, it's to support them, you know? I think the biggest thing, though, when a woman's having a situation where she feel like she's not being heard, she feel like she probably can't even talk to the male sometimes because she feel like he going to be thinking I'm emotional, or he going to be thinking that, you know, I'm taking things too far. I think sometimes, though, with the relationship between men and women, we got to look at our similarities and respect our differences, you know, because, I mean, we all want to be heard. We all want somebody to hear us out. We want to be supported. We want to be loved. We want to know that if we mess up and do something wrong, though, we got somebody that got our back. But at the same time, though, we know that other person is going to hold themselves accountable, you know, and be a role model, though, you know, by example, you know, rather than just say, you know. So I think that's probably the biggest part, because, I mean, that is a big issue, though, that women should not feel the emotional, you know, but due to the fact that men have been traumatized, you know, through white supremacy, through the family, they feel like they don't have no emotions. But the emotional connection is what the relationship is all about, you know what I'm saying? That's true intimacy, is you being honest. Listening to people is intimacy, you know, mm-hmm. You talk about things, though, that you don't tell nobody, and you tell them that's intimacy. So we got to get back to, are we loving somebody, or are we desiring them, you know what I mean? Because, we can't look at that, we're not going to look at the lack of love we didn't have for ourselves. And I think that's the biggest topic of 2020. We got to get out of these rigid gender roles and start relating to each other, though, you know, on a one-to-one level, though, and make sure that we don't settle for each other, though, and pick someone on our level that can uplift us to make us better and not drag us down.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, that's what you got to tell it. Because I'm telling, when I tell you, this is a new day for women, and that women are independent, and women are setting boundaries. And I'm telling you, this is not going on. You blowing up and acting like you a damn popper on New Year's when you pull that string and then confetti pop everywhere. You pop off over here if you want to. You know, that's not appropriate. That's not appropriate. And all this up anger and anxiety and not knowing how to communicate. I mean, this stuff festers up. And then you got men who attacking the women. You know, first it goes to tearing up the house. Women recognize red flags when you see them, because that's also very important. You know, first it's the red flag of him tearing up your thing. That's a warning. Get out the way. Because if you in the path, you might get toe up too. And I'm not saying you should be running and hiding in closets and locking doors, but I am saying that's a red flag. You need to get that brother up out your face. This brother is not ready to be an adult. This brother is still acting like a child, you know, because what ends up happening is this cycle of acceptance. Once that happens once and everybody think that crap is cool, you got a cycle of abuse now. Next time he get upset, he going taking that frustration out on you. And I'm here to let you know, you don't have to take that. That's why I started the show off with none of your concerns, because women, we are thinkers, we contemplate, we meditate, we do things we need to do for ourselves, for our sanity, when people are coming into our energy. You know, we have some coping skills as women. You know, I don't know if men had the opportunity to be socialized to know what coping skills are, how to use positive, healthy coping skills to handle their emotions.
But you know what? I think the big question is, though, is that how much do the literacy rate in black boys really is a relationship to anger? You know, because when you really sit back and think about it, you can't use your mouth, you're going to use your hands. You know what I'm saying? And if you really never learn how to have to, and if you really don't know how to read and write, then you are going to have the inability to express your feelings. And if you can't express your feelings, it's going to make you more angry. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's, we got to look at that.
I gotta say, just not to cut you off, I gotta say this though, because we only got about five to six minutes before the show ends, so we can get to our closing thoughts, right? But what I would say to that is, you wouldn't know, a lot of these kids don't know how to read or write because the heavy influence of the music on these children. These kids know how to say words, they don't know how to spell. I'm That's serious true. About that. Now, they know how to say stuff, they don't know how to spell.
This is why a lot of teachers have to pay attention. He's a principal now, but he talks about he was the biggest clown. He's a beautiful husband and grandfather and all this to his family, but he was a clown. But his mother, it's going to be on you. See, sometimes you have to tell them that these things, and had he had to go back, and now he just graduated with a master's degree, and he's a principal. But everybody has a chance to come out. But it takes communication. It takes love, the kind of love that God's talking about, not the love that the world put out there, because it leads to destruction. But anybody. And that is one of the problems with when males don't know how to write, because right now I have about 6 young men I have worked with in the last 2 years who went with a girl who did their paper, and when it came time, they broke up and they don't know what to do when they're in the 12th grade. it's like teaching the girls, you don't do anybody else's work. You are hurting him and his future wife. And it's like,
no, don't do it.
There's a lot of socialization need to go on. My oldest son was caught in that. And he said, oh, she's so smart. She can just, this here, they ended up splitting. And he had his own insurance business almost ruined. He's got to start over. And I said, start over from ground zero. You made some bad choices. That's on you. And he's finally awakening up and saying, because he told me, he said, yeah, Mom, I did. Yeah, because you didn't do it for yourself. You're not guaranteed that person going to be with you. A couple of nephews, same thing. They're in college now, but they had to come back and go to MATC and take up some courses in writing. So my whole thing is, we as the older generation, the teachers, have to make sure, if he can only draw the picture and he can't write it yet, let him draw it, write the word by it, and now that's the word to go with that, and in no time, they will be able to do it. But they're like the forgotten generation. They're troublemakers. Milwaukee itself and Kenosha had every boy in that school system in a special program for money. They were sued for it. But see, that's the thing. Let a boy be a boy. You can't sit there quietly. You can work with it. We need better teachers. Not take a test and say you can teach this, but you need people skills. Because they're going to have to be there. How does a kid feel when they call their dad a deadbeat? All these different things, a lot of things need to be cleaned up. But it's communication, male and female. You are two different people. One is not above the other. It's a partnership.
Exactly. So that means that you can cook and you can clean. That is not just a thing that I have to do. That's what that means.
Well, all okay. My boys can cook and they can clean. And they can't stand the way I'm living now, because either I'm going to be a housewife, a mother, or I'm going to be a teacher. I need a maid. Okay.
I know that's right. So, I know that's right, Lulu.
But we got to have that communication. We cannot put one above the other, because society wants to do that and make it look like that. You can be a real king, don't have to say you're king.
That's
true. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
A real queen, she gonna be a queen. She gonna do it, but when she start having to, I am, then you're not.
Amen.
Well, fake it till you make it. Say what you got to say to believe it. To those sisters that say, and they are queens, because that's about programming and yourself to be motivated so that you can rise to the occasion.
So we need to open the school.
Not queenly thing.
So we need to open a school for communication and talk to people, because they don't put, someone has put them on a pedestal so high that in their glass, their porcelain, and the minute they fall, they're going to crack in millions of pieces. And that's what I'm seeing now. On. So we got to make
a change. We already cracked in a million pieces now, Lulu. We already cracked in a million pieces, hell. We confuse a lot of the times. We don't know who we are. We lacking some identity. We are lacking.
See, when you get 72, I have to say this. When you get 72, you done seen all this. I know who I am. And I had to learn to love myself. So we can let them say they done did all this. If you get up and wash your face and read your book, read your Bible, read what you got to do, you are a whole person. We got to stop letting them tell us we broken up, because you can't put a broken porcelain back together. You're going to have all that glue stuck out. So we got to call ourselves home. We just have to get better at communicating.
Amen. Right.
Okay, I can accept that. Well, listen, you guys, I'm happy you were here on Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe. Thank you, Josh Jermaine, for coming on, and Ms. Lucille Bennett for adding your contributions to this discussion today. Come join us next Saturday from 3 to 5. Black Sister Talk, where you can breathe. Thank you all for your continued listenership. You can also reach us at www.patreon.com/BlackSisterTalk. Thank you.